Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. By the way, one more note about all of it. They will also have Emmy-winning filmmaker Michelle Ferrari on today on her documentary The Vote, which is supposed to be really good. I haven't seen it, but which explores the role of suffragists as trailblazing activists. So among the things coming up on all of it at 12 o'clock. So last month, in an effort to de-escalate protests and appease those calling for change within the NYPD, Mayor de Blasio announced a policy change having to do with police body cameras and how easily that footage could be accessed and viewed by the public. Previously, it was entirely up to the discretion of the NYPD whether or not to release body cam footage. The mayor says that's going to change.
All video and audio footage of incidents must be released within 30 days if they meet one of the three criteria I'll name now. When an officer discharges their firearm that hit someone or could hit someone, when an officer discharges a taser in a way that results in the death of an individual or substantial bodily harm, and when an officer's use of force results in death or great bodily harm. In those cases, the obligation will be for the NYPD to release all pertinent video and audio footage within 30 days.
So that was Mayor de Blasio on June 16th talking about changes to body camera policy. Footage will automatically be released only if it fits that deadly scenario. But what about other instances where something has gone wrong, like a violent altercation at a protest? And who gets to decide what constitutes great bodily harm? Public advocate Jumaane Williams is introducing his own bill that goes further, mandating all NYPD body-worn camera footage be released 5 days from the time video was captured. Here to talk to me about all of that and why the Civilian Complaint Review Board, the body in charge of investigating police misconduct, says the NYPD has been less responsive in meeting requests for body cam footage in recent months, staff attorney with the Legal Aid Society's Cop Accountability Project, Jenvin Wong. Jenvin, thanks so much for joining us. Welcome to WNYC today.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
And let's first step back a bit. A federal judge ordered the NYPD to create a body camera program in 2014 following the stop and frisk verdict, the declaration that that program as it had existed was unconstitutional. The whole idea behind having police wear body cameras is that it will make them behave as if someone is watching. Has it worked?
Well, I think we have to look at the general goals. One of the goals was to change police behavior. One of the other goals was to increase transparency and accountability. And the third goal was to build community trust. Multiple studies since the implementation of the body-worn camera system across the country, not just in the NYPD, but in other police departments, have indicated that there are mixed results in this. and I think some of the reasons surrounding that has to do with the way that the body-worn camera system is maintained, how the footage is released, and what happens after it's released in terms of accountability. And so while this policy by Mayor de Blasio is an improvement in that it takes the discretion away from the police commissioner with respect to the release of the footage, I think we have to look whether or not it goes far enough. Recently, the CCRB released a memo indicating that they were still not getting all of the body-worn camera footage that they were requesting. And not only were they not getting it, it was being significantly delayed. And some of the issues with that had to do with the pandemic, but I think it was also part of a longer standing issue with the NYPD in turning over body worn camera footage in a delayed manner. And the CCRB requested direct access, and they have recommended that direct access would actually help aid them in their investigations. And this is something that other police departments already do in New Orleans and San Francisco. So when we're talking about the body worn camera system and about transparency and accountability, we have to talk about how the footage is released and how the footage is used.
And it wasn't, as you say, until March of just last year that the NYPD had even equipped all 20,000 patrol officers with cameras. And it also wasn't until last year that the NYPD published any guidelines on how body-worn camera footage would be shared. We talked about some of the limitations of how it's been shared. And so what do you think about the mayor's new decree that it will automatically be released within 30 days, but only in those circumstances of basically death or great bodily harm? How much of a step forward, in your opinion?
Well, it's certainly an improvement from the previous policy, where the discretion was within the police commissioner's, police commissioner's control as to whether or not to release footage within 30 days, with respect to those specific instances. But I don't think it goes far enough. I think that, you know, the CCRB, the OIG, oversight agencies, independent oversight agencies, need to have direct, early, unfettered access to the body-worn camera system so that they are able to conduct their investigations to the best of their abilities. And right now, that's not happening.
And I should say automatic release also applies to any discharge of a firearm or any time an NYPD officer discharges their taser. So are those important guidelines, or are there so many other ways that police misconduct can take place that the release of body-worn camera footage becomes kind of marginal?
You know, those are important instances that the public has a right to know what happened, given the severity and the seriousness of those allegations. But they are everyday interactions between the police and members of the public that also equal violence. In the stop and frisk era, there were reports about how traumatizing that hyper aggressive over policing in neighborhoods of color were to people in those communities. And not every single one of those instances involved the discharge of a weapon. Many times it was really just aggressive stops. And so we're not capturing that. And so I think that we have to really consider that when we talk about the cost-benefit analysis of the body-worn camera system. In too many instances, NYPD has shown a tendency to undermine accountability and transparency. For example, they have previously opposed to the release of body-worn camera footage in a timely manner. Their previous opposition to the repeal of 50A, police secrecy law, with respect to disciplinary records, and this ongoing problem with their slow walking a body-worn camera footage request to the CCRB. So there's also this issue where officers are able to manipulate camera footage. You know, the CCRB released a report last year about how officers were often using the body-worn camera system improperly, turning them on too late into an encounter, or cutting off too early before an encounter had actually ended. And so in those instances, body-worn camera footage can be limited in its scope and usefulness to an investigative agency. Nonetheless, because the body-worn camera system is not going anywhere, I think what we need to ensure is that we have better control and better policies in place to actually increase transparency and accountability. And so that means, making sure that oversight agencies have that early direct access to unedited body-worn camera footage before the officer involved has a chance to view that footage and conform their story before an investigation has actually taken place. And so it's not difficult to grant oversight agencies direct access to the body-worn camera footage. New Orleans and San Francisco already have independent civilian oversight agencies that have direct access. So I think that this is something that the city should be considering. And critics had brought this up when the NYPD first began rolling out the body-worn camera implementation to begin with. So this isn't something that is new. It is something that has been spoken about before and discussed before. And certainly given the recent events, it should be discussed again.
Listeners, we have time for a few phone calls for Jen Vinh Wong from the Legal Aid Society's Cop Accountability Project as we talk about body-worn camera footage and when it should be released to the public. Any police officers or former police officers who've used body-worn cameras listening right now, do you want to say how, if at all, it affects what you do on the job? Or anyone else with a comment or question, 646-435-7280, 646-435-7280, 646-435 7280. So this Jumaane Williams bill to mandate that all NYPD body-worn camera footage be released 5 days from the time the video was captured. Does that mean it would just exist in a public archive somewhere?
I'm not sure. From my reading of the bill, I think that the details and how it would be administered would still have to be worked out. But it looks like what the public advocate is advocating for here is that there is greater transparency and earlier access to body-worn camera footage and a broader category of instances that should be made public.
Let's take a phone call right now. Nick in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Nick.
Hi. I wanted to ask the guests, I think the idea of the body cam greater accessibility, is a great thing for an after-the-fact situation. But I'm wondering, in terms of preventative measures, how you might feel about a quota for the police so that a certain percentage of police must be from the specific area that they're policing.
A residency requirement. I want to keep this pretty much on topic on body cameras today, but residency requirement is always a good conversation too. Do you have, very briefly, Jen Vinn, a position on that?
NYPD already has a residency requirement. We do have some exceptions, but what we've noticed about the residency requirement is that even amongst the residency requirement, there's a racial disparity, where the majority of officers of color are actually from within the five boroughs, and the opposite is true for non-officers of color. They're actually from those more outlying counties within New York City, outside of New York City. And so I think that while a residency requirement is a good idea, there are ways for officers to get around that.
Steve in the Hudson Valley, you're on WNYC. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Brian. I'm curious why the individual police officers have the right to turn on and turn off their cameras at will. I know that they have claimed that it's a privacy issue for certain individuals in certain circumstances, which is probably correct. But if all the footage goes to NYPD first, they can use their discretion as to release it, and when an authority needs it, it's there.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I was going to ask a related question, Jen Vinn, which is, in these cases where it's being documented that they're turning on the body cams too late or turning them off too early before a controversial part of an encounter occurs, are they being disciplined for that?
Well, the policies are in place where they're supposed to be. The question is whether or not there's actually any fidelity to those policies and in disciplinary action being taken in a timely manner after the situation has come to the attention of supervisors. And that's another question, and I think that may differ from precinct to precinct. I think it's certainly an issue that the NYPD is trying to address, at least in policy. But again, I think the question is whether or not there's any fidelity to it and whether or not discipline is happening in a close enough time frame to when they are not following the patrol guide.
Can you tell if a body camera is on? Can a civilian who is having an encounter with the police? One of our reporters noted in a tweet that during some of the protests, body cams appeared not to be on because there was no blinking light. Is that a tell? Is it easy enough to tell?
That is a tell, and also under the Right to Know Act, I believe the office and the patrol guide, in addition to that, officers should be telling civilians when they are recording an encounter.
And in another twist to this story, the CCRB, the body in charge of investigating NYPD misconduct, sent out a memo this month saying the NYPD has been less responsive in handing over camera footage over time. That response time has, quote, gotten steadily worse. So before we get into why that might be, is the CCRB entitled to more access to body cam footage than the general public? And by how much?
You know, the CCRB is an independent oversight agency. And so I think that they, in order for them to do their job well, they do need access to the documents and videos and evidence that they should have access to, so that they can evaluate and investigate in a manner that empowers the agency to make the correct disciplinary recommendations. Ultimately, their recommendations are recommendations. The police commissioner has the full discretion whether or not to adopt, modify, or reject those recommendations. Now, at the end of 2019, there was an agreement between the NYPD and the CCRB that would facilitate body-worn camera footage being provided to them in a more timely fashion. It did not necessarily grant direct access. What it did was it was an agreement that the NYPD would establish a facility where CCRB investigators could search and review body-worn camera footage within NYPD facilities. So that was supposed to happen at the end of 2019, but given all of the recent events, that has not happened. As it stands right now, you know, I think that the body-worn camera footage has been increasingly delayed. And, you know, the CCRB in that same memo said it could be streamlined or bypassed if they had direct access. And I agree. The CCRB made several recommendations that would actually improve the facilitation of getting that body-worn camera footage for their investigations. And I'm not really sure if the NYPD has really taken those recommendations and policies seriously and whether or not they've implemented more of them. In any event, if the CCRB is truly to be empowered, then we need to empower them. They're ready to do the work. And so it seems to me that what we need to do is we need to stop letting the NYPD undermine, you know, efforts to have meaningful oversight. And we need to stop having NYPD allowing, we need to stop allowing NYPD to undermine efforts to really implement accountability for officers who engage in misconduct.
I see from what I read that other cities such as Washington, San Francisco, and New Orleans have created a much simpler process. They let civilian oversight investigators go right into the systems that store the footage. So how much do delays in turning over footage have an effect on whether police officers are held accountable for things they may have done wrong that actually were captured? Like, can delays outrun certain statute of limitations on any disciplinary charges?
There are statute of limitations, and so when the footage is slow walked, it does affect that. But not only that, but any time a long period of time elapses in an investigation, it could render certain evidence to be destroyed, or it could make an investigation harder. And so having that early access is really important. In addition to that, NYPD officers are allowed an opportunity. NYPD officers are allowed an opportunity to review the body-worn camera footage before they're even brought in for the interview with the CCRB. And that's another reason why the CCRB should have direct access to the body-worn camera footage.
We have about a minute and a half left, and this conversation was primarily about body-worn cameras. That's, you know, a rising controversy, and I wanted to spend almost all of our time focusing on it. This was a segment about body-worn cameras. But just let me get your quick take. As, you know, the head of the Cop Accountability Project at Legal Aid, on why you think shootings are up now. You know the police leadership is trying to blame it on too much cop accountability. If you're saying it's not that, what do you think the reasons are?
I think we're in the middle of a pandemic. We're in the middle of a hot summer. There are many, many reasons that contribute to crime. And I think that for too long, our society has ignored the dire need to address the root causes of violence and have been throwing the police at every problem as opposed to actually treating the illness. And so I think that the police here are falling back on a tried and true method of fear mongering at this point. But it's not really backed up by any data.
But something's making... Right, but I'm asking, I mean, if we assume that, something's making it go up in a way that it wasn't going up in, you know, December and January and February, and we have 15 seconds.
I think that we really need to look at the data from, you know, a longer trend of data, and a longer trend of data shows that, in general, violent crime has been in a downward trend for a very long time. And so while this may be a temporary increase, I think that we have to really look at what our economic situation is for our city right now. We have many people who are unemployed, many people who are not getting the help that they need. And so I think that we need to, again, really ask our elected officials to address the root causes of these societal ills instead of looking at things in a narrow frame.
From Legal Aid, thank you so much for joining us.